Dozen of this millennium's hottest Canadian acts, including Ibu and Kindred, Paul Bachman, Wild Tea and the Spirit, BCDC, Unit 731, Soviet Union, Scavenger, Last Day Lost, Sled Dogs, Sugar Cane, Five Alarm Funk, and Eyewitness. Early bird tickets are $129 for a 3-day pass until June 30th. Save $36 off the gate price. Daily passes and youth discounts available. Call 1-877-265-5565 or visit www.nacuspmusicfest.ca.
Annie's Women's, Children's, and Maternity Wear is a supporter of Kootenai Co-op Radio.
Let us assume a third toke, long and slow. You vaporize, and you take it in and in and in, and there is a sound like the crumpling of a plastic bread wrapper, or the crackling, or the blame, and a tone,
You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio 93.5 FM CJLY. We're broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicooperadio.com.
There is a cheer. The gnomes have learned a new way to say who.
Welcome, this is Fane of the Cosmos, Infinite Moment, and I'm your host, Dustin Sunflower. And wow, what a beautiful day today. It just seems like in the past couple weeks, every time I plant some seeds, there's the rain the next day. So I planted some fava beans and peas and these star fruit, okra. Anyway, it rained perfectly on time. And then yesterday, if any of you were planting, it was an ideal root day for planting potatoes and carrots and stuff. And then today was the full moon. And it's a pretty lovely spring coming on, like rain and sun. And some people are actually complaining about rain. I don't know what they're talking about. I prefer to have a nice moist spring and then have the, you know, a nice hot summer. But I don't want to have a hot summer if I have to inhale smoke and have fires going off and whatever. So, but in the studio tonight, I have two very special people in the studio, two friends. And I'm so blessed that you guys are here. I just feel honored that you guys came and are in here with me in the studio. And so I have Jay, Autumn, and Nadive. But I know your names are different now. So Aviva Cachette and
Hetz Rashon.
Oh man, I tried so hard to get it right and I got it mixed up. Okay. So we're going to be talking and we're going to try and dampen some hysteria that's been going around town, and we're going to set some fires on some other ideas. So it's good. We'll have a honest, feeling-free talk and just ask the questions, and we can just talk and you can just put people's minds at ease and kind of dampen this hysteria that's going on. But first, we're going to play a track from Alex Gray. You're listening to Fane of the Cosmos. If you're listening down at Kootenai Lake, you're listening at 96.5 FM. And here we go.
I acknowledge the privilege of being alive in a human body at this moment, endowed with senses, memories, emotions, thoughts, and the space of mind in its wisdom aspect. It's the prayer of my innermost being to realize my supreme identity in the liberated play of consciousness, the vast expanse. Now is the moment. Here is the place of liberation. Witness the contents of mind, the visions, the sounds, the thoughts, as clouds passing through the vast expanse. The sky-like nature of mind, the rootedness of being is in emptiness, clarity, awareness, unborn, unspoiled, stainlessly pure. The infinite vibratory levels, the dimensions of interconnectedness are without end. There is nothing independent. All beings and things are residents in your awareness. I subject my awareness to the perfection of being, the perfection of wisdom, and the perfection of love. All of these being co-present in the vast expanse. I share this panorama of being and appreciate all I can share it with. A seamless interweaving of consciousness with each moment. Create perfection wherever you go with your awareness. That's why this teaching is so admired by artists. They sense the correctness of the response to life as creative. Life is infinite creative joy. Enjoyment and participation in this creative play is the artist's profound joy. We co-author every moment with universal creativity. To bear our souls is all we ask. To give all we have to life and the beings surrounding us. Here, the nature spirits are intense. We appreciate them. Make offerings to them. These nature spirits that call us here, sealing our fate with each other, celebrating our love. I'm an intersecting kaleidoscope of being, a rainbow refractive wave pattern, a corpuscle of light on the ocean, the transparency of my body with the rocks. Sometimes the only way to summarize my feelings is to draw, to call. collapse the frenzy in my limbs enough to make a mark of appreciation for my existence. Share your presence with others. No boundaries. Completely, lovingly, openly. Life is what makes it love. Why we feel so alive when we love. Service is being available to love. Life is the combustion of love. We're constantly drawing the lines between love and not love. Enter into the non-duality zone, and all judgments dissolve in the vast expanse. It's as though we're co-conspirators of consciousness, everyone, everywhere, everywhen, mixing up our openable minds. It's as though we could gather clouds in the sky and people into our lives. Like an eruption of consciousness, we discover the source of love. Discover yourself as the source and appreciate every moment as perfection. Sunrise, sunset, thank you. Thank you, Creator. Profound, unstoppable connectedness of all beings. Most radical, no thing. The vast expanse. World Spirit is a prayer for the realization of our integration with the web of creation. And we thank everyone for coming here tonight and celebrating the World Spirit. May any merit generated by this ceremony be dedicated to the liberation of all beings.
Okay, folks, welcome back. That was Alex Gray from his album World Spirit, and the person doing the music was Kenji Williams. This is from Magnetic Presence, and I've played tracks from that before. The one about birth is just mind-numbing. So, in the studio, like recently, two folks from the Kootenai tribe, or whatever you want to call it, like from the clan, joined a community called the 12 Tribes, and it sent shockwaves through. Like, for me, I was like, I heard rumors that I'm not even going to repeat on air just because they were so hysterically, like, overdrawn. Like, you guys were strapped down to chairs with clockwork orange with, like, things and, like, you know, beaten with the Torah and, like, you know, like, anyway, all this stuff, like, kind of, you know, the regular Kootenai, like, you know what I mean? Like, D-Dan got... hit by a car, and it turned into like a five vehicle crash where he arms were tossed through the air and his scalp had to be sewn back on and stuff. But it actually, you know, he had a big goose egg on his head and was like, ouch. So that's the way the Coonies go. So why I wanted to invite you on the radio show is just so we can just talk like we always talk as friends and just kind of dispel some of the hysteria and just talk openly without any middle people to interpret or spread the word or whatever. We can just do it fresh right here. So just so listeners who don't know, you know what I'm going to have to do? That's Aviva and Retz. I'm going to have to write it down. I'm sorry. What is it?
It's Hetz.
Hell, God.
Hetz. Yeah. Hetz Rishon.
Rishon. Okay, I'm sorry I have to do this, but...
Oh, that's all right.
Aviva.
Kashet. Aviva Kashet.
You got them written down now. You can go look those up in your Hebrew books.
No, I know. It's so funny because the other day I was digging through my archives and I found all my Hebrew books of, like, all the writing stuff we did as kids and all the mythical tales, and but all written in Hebrew, you know? With the, and in the early days you put these pronunciation accents under certain letters and stuff, and it's math too and music and all this stuff. So I was digging through it and it's so funny to see. I didn't learn just English when I was a kid. I learned Hebrew and English, so it's kind of funny to see my little workbook, like A is for alligator and, you know, whatever it says in Hebrew. I can't even remember from those days. Well, what I thought is that we could I looked around the store. I'm like, we should break bread and just share some kind of liquid, like whether it be water, just as like a symbol of that we're friends no matter what, through time, through whatever. And so I will do the traditional prayer for the breaking of bread for friendship and love and bring it all together, and then maybe one for the drink. It's the same prayer, but you just change a couple words just for the thing. So here we go. I'll bless this. So we'll break this bread as friends. Here we go. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Amen. And then we break it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're eating our hemp seed cookie made by Emelina. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jesus, the hemp hearts. Okay. This is the trick, folks. This is like radio gymnastics. You have to eat 20 crackers with peanut butter. And then you have to interview someone really quick. No. They're busting on this. Now the water. Well, this will be wine, but, you know, the sacred, it's like blood liquid, the flow. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam hamotzi pri hagafen. Amen. This is funny they say amen, but anyway.
Are you going to give an interpretation of what that means? Or a translation?
As I can remember as a kid, it's like... it's like, thank you, God, for this bread. We're breaking it open for goodness. Or something like that. Like,
okay, thank you.
All I remember is that is the prayer for the breaking of bread. And we used to have, I put on my kippah on my desk and, you know... Whew. Man, is it ever hot in here? Or I'm as nervous as hell. So, Hetz, K Can I just call you Hetz?
Like, you is can there call me whatever you want. You
I'm
going to
call
Hetz?
You Jay or Hetz. Oh, can I
Hetz
short
works.
It to Hetz?
Yes.
Hetz works?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Two words,
lots of people
names.
Call me Hetz back at the farm. Hetz is a good shortened, you know.
Okay, so.
Easy to remember.
Okay.
Easy to say.
It is. Hetz and Aviva and Nadiv. I got it down. So, like, what was your spring like? Like, before you joined the tribe, well, like, how were things going? Like, what, were you digging a garden? Were you, like, mm-hmm. where were you at?
Well, in the springtime.
It was the spring.
I mean, it was the spring. Yes, it was the spring. It was an interesting spring. I was living with Aviva out in Salmo on my piece of property out there. And certain things that I was starting to notice, you know, in myself and, you know, Aviva as well, you know, noticing some of the same things. Just kind of, you know, we were just kind of losing touch with town, you know.
Yeah.
We seemed to be like, really getting into the property. Out on my property in Salmo. You know, I was tilling the soil, wanting to, you know, put up this huge garden, getting a bunch of seeds together, you know, planting a bunch of seeds and conditioning the soil and just like, you know, more and more, just could not find any reasons why I wanted to go to town.
No,
in fact,
remember.
It got to a point where it kind of scared me even to think to go to town. You know, going to town and getting some groceries or whatever, you know, get in, get out kind of thing. You know, don't spend any more money than it got to and don't get caught up in the vortex, which, you know, is like nothing wrong with it. I was just not feeling it, you know, as much as I have in the past.
And you were just living. I remember you were talking about you had eaten lentils for a number of
yeah,
days
right.
or something. Was it lentils?
Well, yeah, lentils, rice, and carrots.
Yeah,
so,
it was like
know.
Some very simple diet, and it was you were like that. You know, I just don't even want to go to town. I got enough in my, you know, and I got enough grains to last me for the week.
Yeah.
I remember
super
we were talking
simple.
In the office about that. Like mm-hmm. we were talking about life and where things are at.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and of course, you know, being out there for a period of time, just to, you know, myself and Aviva. Of course, start to get lonely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like start to kind of, you know, naturally crave human contact, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. what, you know, we're meant to, as human beings, we're created to, you know, need contact, need to be with other people, you
yeah.
know. And so, you know, the first things, of course, that start popping into my mind is I need to start a community. I need to find community somehow, you know, without having to go to town all the time and, you know, and get it there because it's not working for me there. And so notice, you know, I'd go around and, you know, kind of talk to people in and out of town, you know, asking, you know, talking about community and, you know, just going over what it takes to make a community and, you know, and then even offering, you know, people, oh, well, you know, how about we come together? We can make a community. I got a piece of land. You know, you can have some of this land, you know. You don't even have to buy it off me. And I noticed, a common response I would get from, you know, talking about this kind of stuff was, oh yeah, well, I people really want their own pieces of land, you know. It gets a little bit discouraging when you want to make a little, you know, bit of a community lifestyle and you got something to offer to people. Here's my piece of property, you don't gotta pay me nothing, come move on my land, let's try and make something. And a lot of times, like I said, you get, you know, people, you know, saying, I need my own piece of land. I need to have my name on it. Or you have people saying, well, I'd come out, but how about you subdivide so I can have my name on it, you know? And
yeah, yeah. I do like the idea of coming together, but sometimes it can work this way, where everybody has their own dwelling, but come together for a communal space, but...
Mm-hmm.
As for ownership of land, I'm kind of not into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
and yeah, but people are like that. Like,
yeah, and it started making me, you know, it made me think, like, you know, every time I just kind of hear this kind of response, I'd be like, well, that kind of negates what I'm looking for, really. You know, it gives you the opportunity one day to put a fence up between me and you and in all sorts of ways. And, you know, that just was not a positive thing in my mind. So this got discouraging after a while. And the more time went on, you know, the more I couldn't turn back from what I already saw, you know, in my heart, which was like I needed a community, you know, and there's no way I could just go back, you know. And so what ended up happening is we ended up isolating ourselves more and more as the days went by,
yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, basically, you know, it got to that point where we were just totally isolated out there on the property, you know, rarely coming in, you know, not really wanting to come into town for any other reason, and even getting to the point where it was just almost futile to be talking to people any longer about trying, you know, to start a community, you know, hey, come over, live on our property. It just wasn't working, right?
Yeah. What was that like for you? Like the isolation part? Like,
well, that was a big part of why things ended up going that way. I don't know where to begin. At the end of winter, Salmo was getting to me. It wasn't Salmo, it wasn't Hetz Rishon, it wasn't me, it was just being alone. Like, we had each other, but that's all we had.
Yeah.
Whenever we went into town, whenever we went partying, whenever we went to potlucks, we would hang out with each other. We just couldn't have, I have lots of amazing friends, but it was just, I felt myself drifting further and further away, and I couldn't really have friends over in Salmo, and nobody wants to come out there, and so I was isolated. We were both so isolated, and got to a point where I didn't know what it was. Am I missing town? Am I missing hanging out with the girls? And I didn't know what to do anymore, and so we both decided that it would be good if I moved closer to town. And so I moved in with a friend of mine, a girl, and it was wonderful. She's amazing, and I had a great time, but it wasn't fulfilling. I wanted to be with him, and it wasn't him that was the problem. It was just being with him that was the problem.
Yeah.
We satisfy each other in one way, but we can't, like, that's just not fulfillment, just with one person. We needed something deeper, and we've been looking for it, and we've been talking to people about it, and nobody seemed to be as interested in really, really coming together and living in unity.
Yeah.
People can talk about it, and that we, you know, we've been talking about it forever.
Yeah,
but who's
totally
actually doing it? We weren't doing it. And so I just got to the point where I didn't want to go out anymore. And when I went out, it just didn't feel real anymore. It felt so fake. For the whole time that we've been together, I've been interested in checking out the community, the 12 tribes, and for reasons I didn't check it out for a year. And during the month that I was living with Rachel, I went and checked it out, and it was just what I was looking for. It was just what I don't know. I was happy in Salmo, but I needed more. And it wasn't just community. It was a community of people who have something holding them together greater than just themselves.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we've seen it here in the Slocan Valley. There have been numerous communes and mm-hmm. numerous intentional communities, and I don't think any of them have made it. Maybe a few. I think the most successful one that I know of is the land co-op in Argenta, I think, is the longest surviving kind of group of people working together, but they have their own pad, you know, like, mm-hmm. and maybe some other places. But yeah, it's one of the most difficult things that in our culture. The scene has changed a lot in the Coots, just in, you know, the short time. Like, I've been here, I don't know, 10, my kid's 12, 13, 14 years. And even in that time, things have really changed quite a bit, you know, like just even the price of land, or just even trying to get people to do stuff because of past failures, you know, that kind of thing. Like, people are resistant to, not resistant, but it's just hard to get things together, it seems, in this area.
It's hard to,
so
once
I can understand,
get it together, to keep it together.
To keep it together,
people can
yeah.
come together and they can live together for a time, but there's something deeper missing, and that's why, you know, husbands and wives and fathers and daughters and best friends and whatever, nobody can stay together. We just can't love each other indefinitely. We can't, we're bad at doing it. I mean, even our friendships don't last. And if they do last, they fizzle out and they go up and down, and it's not solid, it's not stable, and it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm, our relationships are not sustainable.
I mean, I have, you know, I wouldn't put that as a blanket thing, but it, you know, on the whole, there is some truth in that for sure. Like, I have friends who I've had forever here and are rock solid, and we go through, like, there's seasons in life, right? Like, on the earth, there's right now, it's green and fecund and, like, beautiful, charging with life. And in the depths of winter, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's seasons to all things, including relationships, including communities, including, like, you will have a winter in a community sometimes. Mm-hmm. You also have a spring. You also have a harvest. Like, you just can't throw the baby out with the bathwater sometimes. But anyway, so you guys, you're out. So then you decide to visit the 12 tribes.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to for a while. For the longest time, just every time I'd go to the cafe, just staring up at the people and wondering what are they all about, and bringing home the free papers and reading them, and then Hetzeshon would burn them, and we'd start our fires.
I did not want her to go there at first, you know?
Yeah.
Just how it started out is her interest. She had her peaked interest in the farm, and I was just not having any of it. At the time.
I knew that he cared, and that his...
it was an insecurity.
Maybe being insecure about me going, I knew that it was in love, you know, and so I took it and I thought, okay, you know, he cares about me, and so if he's asking me not to, then it must be for a good reason. So I didn't go, but in the short period of time that we weren't living together, like 4 weeks or whatever, I was doing my own thing and like really trying to figure out like what do I need to fulfill me. And I went to the farm, and it probably took, you know, just one night and one day, and I remember waking up. I stayed there for the weekend, and I woke up the second morning, and I just didn't want to go. I just didn't want to leave, and it wasn't just the community, because I have so many amazing friends, like the Nelson tribe, the Kootenai tribe, are friends. Like, they're so wonderful. They're wonderful people. But I just wanted something deeper, you know. I wanted what I've been searching for my whole life. I was raised believing in God, and as a Jehovah's Witness, and I left that behind when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
14, because I was just, you know, I was doing my own thing, exploring other scenes.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And I always knew that there was something deep in that, but when I was on my own reading the Bible by myself, I started realizing that, you know, there was lots of things said that weren't being fulfilled in any of the, you know, however many Christian denominations there are, and I was looking for that. And when I went to the community, I found that it wasn't a religion, it was just people living together and loving each other, but having faith, and that's what keeps them together, you know, that's what keeps us together.
Yeah.
If we all got together with all of our friends, our Kootenai tribe, and tried to live together on one piece of land and, you know, gather twice a day, eat all our meals together, share all our money, we'd just go nuts because, you know, I want my $360 boots or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like that. I was so like that.
We're damaged by our culture.
Sure, we are.
That's what Terrence McKenna says. Culture is the single largest cause of the like degradation of the search for spirit. Like, culture intercedes, and like in our culture we're chained down by the worst possible culture there is, consumer culture. Mm-hmm. It's not even a spiritual culture or whatever, you know, it's not any of that. It's a consumer culture that locks us down and gets us in this thinking, you know, I'm free to do what I want in your time. Love me, hold me, because I'm free to do what I want. And just buying and tits and fast cars and buildings. We've gone through all this. Remember, we were talking about, like, our culture just offers us nothing. Doesn't really have something of substance or something to live up to. Like, you're going to live up to Britney Spears, or like you're going to live up to an SUV, or, you know, there's nothing really there to So she went to the farm?
She went to the farm.
And
she,
you were, and she, how long?
And she stayed at the farm for a day or two. And I remember the first day I went to go, I was on my way because I was still going on this community thing, right? I was like, okay, I'm going to start a community. I started to get inspired by the things Aviva was telling me about the farm, Mount Sentinel Farm. And so it was inspiring me. And I was thinking in my head, oh, well, that's really inspiring, the things she's telling me about how they get together, how they talk, you know, how they share, you know. And I was only getting like such a little fraction of a fraction of what was really going on out there. But it started to inspire me. So it made me go, okay, you know, I'm going to make a community, whether there's nobody with me or not. I'm going to start, make it, and they will come, right? You know, something like that. And so I was on my way out to Castle Garden to go get some chickens. Got to get some chickens, right?
Yeah,
to
have, start
a,
off
to have a farm, right? Yeah. In the community. Get sustainable. And so on the way there, I went to pick up Aviva at the farm. I had lunch. I met Nadeev, whom I'd met before, a long time back, years before. But so re-met Nadeev and a few of the people at the farm. We had lunch together. And, you know, instantly all the, you know, I had a fairly big shield in front of me still, you know, because I was scared of losing Aviva, right? Because, so I had this big shield up, you know. But, man, like when I went to that farm and started looking at everybody and seeing the smiles on their faces and seeing their children happy, you know, running around, you know. The food, the love that was put in the food that we were eating, the farm itself, you know, just the feeling I got from it, that shield just like obliterated, it just shattered, right? And I just had a big smile on my face and enjoyed the meal and, you know, enjoyed the company of these people. And, you know, still, you know, I didn't have like any complete revelation about their lifestyle. And once again, you know, I was still, you know, reasoning in my mind that what I saw was my inspiration to start my own community. And now it was even deeper, you know. Now it's going to start a real community with some spiritual guidance and, you know, all this. And so then, you know, only after that, I think the next time you went was the festival, the Merrymakers Caravan that was held at Mount Sentinel Farm on a Wednesday about a month ago or so. And so I showed up to that, and this was a festival where members of all 12 tribes so people from all around the world, from farms and tribes that cover the globe, came. They're in a big caravan.
Of buses.
On buses, yeah. There was like four buses.
And a food truck.
And so, you know, they had a festival there on the grounds. It was quite a thing. It was pretty amazing. And
folks from the Paris one, the one in France.
Was from France?
Folks from the France?
There was a representation of every tribe around the world. So all 12 tribes had representatives in that caravan.
Cool, because I met the folks in Paris, at the market in Paris. I don't know what their tribe's called. Ben? No.
Ruben
okay.
is France.
Hmm. Yeah, I met those folks. They had really awesome wool pullover, like ponchos. Really thick, like that thick, man. But in pouring rain, you'd be dry and warm, no problem. And these cool wallets, like these wallets that open up. But anyway, so that's when you went down to the gathering.
So, yeah, I went to the gathering, and I sat in on, you know, a few of the talks. You know, there was some talks. There was a man from California who did a talk, one of the farms down in California. And Nadeev did a talk during the festival, and there was a, you know, an open forum table, and I joined in on, you know, many of the open forums and the dancing and the music and the food. And still, though, I was allowing myself to see all this and not let it get into my heart. You know, I was letting it get into my mind instead, and was like, all right, I'm so inspired. I'm creating my own community. You know, I'm so creating my own community now, like full charge. You know, I'm going to study and research and figure out how to put it all together with a heavy spiritual essence, you know, and transformative nature. And I'll figure this out, you know. And I don't know where I was going with that, but halfway through that festival, more than halfway through that festival, and by this time that shield I was talking about was obliterated. It was long since obliterated. Like, it was gone. It was so gone. I was just so, like, I was taking it in. I just didn't realize how much it was about to pierce my heart, you know, this lifestyle. And I went back to town, came here to town, and, you know, did some running around town and whatnot. And just what happened in town just kind of made me think, just, you know, looking around and thinking at, you know, the incidences that happened to me in town. And then I went back to the farm to, you know, join the rest of the festival, and, you know, less than halfway back to the farm, I just made up my mind. It just hit me. I could not block, you know, what, you know, the revelation. Yeah. You know, my heart had been pierced. I could not block what I'd seen. I could not block what I'd felt. I could not block any of what I'd, you know, what I'd seen, felt, heard, all of it. I just could not deny myself what I'd seen. Went back to the farm and told Aviva that, you know, I know this is the way. And and now I was telling her, it's just a matter of figuring it out now. How am I going to integrate myself into this community, you know, because I got this big life. I got a property in Salmo and a mortgage and, you know, a truck and payments and some animals and yada 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 yada. And you know, and was still, you know, trying to reason with myself on how I, you know, it's like, okay, but, you know, I'll come back and I'll come and visit every once in a while, and I'll slowly, you know, integrate myself into this lifestyle, and I'll keep on going back out to Salmo, and you know, I'll deal with what I have to deal with out there, and it'll probably take me about 3 months and it didn't take me long though until I realized what really had to be done if I truly seen and had revelation about the life out there at Mount Sentinel Farm within, you know, about the life within the 12 tribes. You know, I had to give everything up, and I realized
that. Okay, but what about your books, man? I have to.
What about my books?
Where are the books?
Well, that's a sensitive topic.
Okay, you don't have to. You don't have to tell me, but you didn't.
The good ones
you didn't
with us still.
You didn't recycle them, did you?
They're still sitting on the shelf in Salmo.
Okay,
you could go break
it. That's a whole other topic.
Okay,
a whole other
sorry.
Topic. Maybe we'll get that a bit later.
Okay. Yeah. The books. What a collection we had. That's just the okay. So, yeah, I understand that. Like you just. So what did you do? You just had a yard sale?
Oh, no, it hasn't happened yet.
Oh, okay.
You know, but I came to the conclusion that in order for me to fully live this life that I'd seen, to be able to follow through with my revelation, I had to give up my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I gave up my life. And, you know, I grabbed what I could, what I needed. I went to the farm and I stayed there. And I stayed there for a week, you know, just kind of checking it out and gaining more revelation and, you know, living with these people and, you know, joining in on, you know, the you know, they call it a menha, the meetings that we have in the morning and in the evening, you know, every single day, and listening to the music and dancing and whatnot. And after a week, just was fully immersed and just, like, barely had any memories of my past life before that, and just made the decision.
So what about, like, do you get to keep any of your clothes? Like,
Is
there tribal boxer shorts? Or like
tribal boxer shorts.
Like 12 tribes boxer shorts?
One day,
hopefully. Right? We're going to be making all of our own clothes, okay, for sure. We want to be able to...
But, like,
to
you get to bring your... Is there, like, a dress code?
There's no dress code, but we dress modestly. And I didn't understand why. I remember the first time I went to the farm, I was like, why are these people wearing such frumpy clothes? And after staying there for, like, 2 days, I understood. When you're living in the city, when you go to the bar, when somebody checks you out or hits on you, you can turn around and walk away. And you may never see that person again. And if you do, it'll be, you know, on the street in public, and they're not going to do anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to worry about how you're affecting them because you never see them. But when you live with 40 people and, you know, half of them are single, men and women, you want to be sensitive. Like, I don't know.
You see these people every single day. Yeah. You don't want to be stirring. I personally don't want to be stirring the hearts of my brothers when I have my heart. I want to save my heart for this man right here. I don't want to make anybody else look at me. You know, I want to save that all. And I just don't want to stir emotions in somebody that I'm not going to reciprocate.
That's why people are so callous in the time we live in right now, because we get hammered by that energy all the time, and it really damages people's souls. And it's one of the reasons why there's such mistrust in relationships right now. It's one of the reasons why people can't come together very well, is because there's such deep mistrust on so many levels. So we're being healed of that.
So, like, I don't know, like, you guys are going to be together. Like, you're together. Like, this is the thing, right? You guys were together in the outside world. You're in the 12 tribes now. Are you together in there? Like, do you guys get to sleep in the same bedroom, same bed, same area?
No, we haven't. Let's see. That festival that Hetz Rishon was telling us about, a couple days after that, I moved into the community, and the following morning, I gave up my life, and he was a week after me. He came a couple days after that, and then, you know, a few days after that was in the same place as I was. And since the day that I moved into the community, we haven't held hands. You haven't
smooched? Nothing?
Nothing.
Sorry. My honey just went away tree planting, so I'm very sad. But like,
it's hard for sure. It's not easy. It's not like
in the spring.
Wow, I'm a new person, and I don't have any feelings. Like, mm-hmm. I have feelings, and I love him. And right now, we're just getting stable in our beliefs, and just learning how to be. And we have a lot of healing to do. And I mean, it's not like it's going to be forever. It's not like it's going to be very long. I don't know when it's going to be.
And, like, I know you as kind of, like, you're headstrong. You're, like, you know what I mean? Like, you have more experience in the world. Like, I mean, in the sense of having traveled around and experienced things. Like, you're a pretty advanced, mature person, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, it seems like in the 12 tribes, and I haven't even been to the farm, so I can only say, but it's more of a, it's more patriarchal, like, you know what I mean, in that sense? Like, I don't know how the Old Testament bespeaks the patriarchy to me, and some of the aspects of how a couple relate to each other seem to me to be, like, how, you know, like, I'm like,
okay,
she ain't gonna take that shit, you know what I mean, like...
Well, to put it simply, if you want to look at the Bible, sure, yeah, man is the head, but, you know, a woman's the heart. And people hear that, oh, what, you're a woman and you're going to submit to your husband? What are you talking about? But before we were in the community, I was submitting to him. A year ago, I wanted to go and visit the community, and he said, you know, Autumn, I don't think it's a good idea. I don't want to lose you. I don't want you to go. I don't have faith that you'll come home to me. And I said, oh, okay, sure, yeah, I won't go, you know. And we submit to each other, you know, we love each other, and because I know he loves me, I believe he loves me, I can entrust myself to him and trust that what he helps me to decide is in my best interest. And I personally think it's natural. Like, you, I don't know about you and your honey, but I'm
she's
sure...
She's a tree planter. I'm a lowly office worker.
But you listen she's to got, each other's hearts, right?
She's got the brawn. No, I'm kidding. But, like...
And you have different strengths.
We just equalize things.
Yeah.
We try never to... You know, there's no male role and there's no female. Like, I'm not... It's not like, honey, time to go to the kitchen. I'm going to go outside and split wood. Like, she's the one carrying the wood. I'm... You know what I mean? Like...
Men cook in the community.
Yeah, there's physical roles.
There's physical...
Women can be mechanics.
That's all. So there's no gender bias to the...
Whatever your gifting is, you're totally free to do that. And...
No. Like if you're a woman and you're good at mechanics, you can do mechanics.
For sure.
And you guys rotate the jobs equally, like men have to do dishes.
Oh, the guys are the first ones doing the dishes right after lunch every single day. I haven't even finished my lunch and the dishes are done.
Yeah, I was just doing dishes this morning before breakfast.
Holy whoa.
I think the guys do more dishes than I do.
It sounds like a matriarchal society.
I'm ready to put on the Mr. Clean track, I say, for bachelor moments like this. No, but I mean, that's in the chores, but then there's the how things operate within within the actual couple themselves, within a I don't know, what do you guys call it when people get together, like in married or
marriage?
It's called marriage,
a covenant,
yeah, husband and wife.
What is it called?
A covenant, a marriage. Covenant.
Okay, I just wasn't sure if there was like a sacred word for it.
When we get married, I'm emotional. I am such an emotional person, and I sometimes.
So you guys are gonna get married? Oh boy, sorry. Here I am on air. Whoops. Sorry. I shouldn't ask the question, really, because it puts people on the spot. But I mean, you guys love each other, and you're going to build that love to whatever point that is.
Right.
Sometime in the future.
Right.
We'll just say it's a very good chance.
Okay.
But nothing's definite.
No, okay. I just, yeah.
I can probably shed a little light on...
Okay.
On what's going on
between them?
Between them, yeah. Because
how?
Well, what happens is people come into the community, and some have good relationships and some have bad relationships. And so one of the things that we've learned over we've been about 35 years now dealing with these kind of situations, and some people have a bad foundation and just a really unhealthy way of relating, and for that relationship to have a hope of enduring and growing, there has to be healing that comes in that relationship, and it's very difficult for healing to come to a dysfunctional relationship apart from the individuals being healed first, and so in those kind of cases, you know, there's a need for other people to get involved in the individual's lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you have men that didn't ever learn from other men how to love their wife,
mm-hmm.
and so they need that kind of input to be able to, you know, start building in a positive way. Same thing with women. Sometimes women had terrible relationships with their mothers or with their sisters, and so they don't know, and so there's a time where relationships that are, you know, that are not solid can be. It's like a rest, you know, a break,
mm-hmm.
for healing to come. And then, you know, if that relationship if there's love in that relationship, then it's gonna come together and it's gonna be on a good foundation. And if there isn't love in that relationship, you surely don't want to try to keep something together that's not based on love. It's just gonna cause hurt.
And the integration too into the community, right? Because if you've given your life up, then going into the community, the relationship has to work in the community too.
That's what the community is. It's like a marriage, really.
It's the healing of the people, but it's also retrofitting the relationship for the community too, right? Like in some ways.
Well, a healthy community is based on healthy relationships of individuals. So you can't have unhealthy relationships between men and women and have a community. It doesn't work. And that's, mm-hmm. this is the reason why most of the communities that have come through this area haven't worked, is because the breakdown on the most basic level, which is between men and women,
mm-hmm.
and it rips communities apart when men and women don't have healthy relationships. And then if you make it beyond that point, if men and women don't relate normally and in a healthy way, then the children become dysfunctional, and if the first generation doesn't break the community, the next generation will, if there's an unhealthy family structure.
Yeah.
That's what happened in the 60s. The hippies had a lot of optimism and a lot of good ideas, but they didn't make it past 5 years because they didn't know how to deal with some of the realities of life.
It's kind of weird though, because like the 12 tribes seems to use a lot of 60s icons,
We started in the late 60s.
We're into the final days here, long from the 60s, but those icons are still used as symbols of that movement, yet it's a movement that you say is didn't work or didn't work out. But I mean, like, it's kind of weird using icons and visual association and that kind of thing from this, from a movement that you didn't think made it, you know, like, like the psychedelic bus, you know, the bus covered in psychedelics with the whole thing. If it didn't work, why emulate it? You know, if you didn't think it worked, why emulate its trappings?
It's a good question, and we're not emulating it. What we're doing is that bus, for example, is like a flag for those who were part of that movement and got burned, but that still have some kind of memories of the hope that they once had. That maybe some that were sincere and didn't find fulfillment would come out of the woodwork and find something that's actually working and that's fulfilling what they desired in their hearts. And that's why we built that bus, actually.
Why at Shambhala, then? Because there's nobody really who grew up in the 60s at Shambhala. Well, maybe,
these,
like,
are the children of the,
there's
the 60s.
Five or six people. You know, like, it's probably
the generation.
It still draws attention, and then people ask questions. And
yeah.
Well, Shambhala, it's the same thing as the 60s. You know, it's got a little bit different look to it, different music, but it's the same spirit.
No,
in many
it
ways.
Isn't. No, it isn't. It's
heal the earth and peace and love and you know,
freedom, total autonomous, total autonomous freedom.
That's what they say. You know, I don't know.
No. What? Well, just the whole. I don't know.
What is the vision behind Shambhala, anyways?
I think it's the party your ass off in 3 days.
Do a bunch
no.
of crazy substances and. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of what came out of the 60s, because what came out of the 60s was a bunch of kids realizing, oh, I can be free, right? Mm-hmm. And then as that, you know, mutated and changed and evolved down the ages, what did it turn into? To be totally autonomously free from everything? Party your ass off.
Yeah, but see, the thing is though, folks, we always, like, for some reason, why did everything get born in the 60s? This has been going on for thousands of years. People creating tribes, creating different communities, creating all kinds of different, visions of what could be, you know? Like the 60s, I mean, you can look back through history and there's times when, oh, the Bohemians or the, you know what I mean? That goes back through history. But it's just unusual. That's only the one thing that's bothered me about the Tall Tribes is the whole 60s thing. It's long gone, and it's outwardly criticized, but they use all the trappings from it. And I'm like, well, why would... If you don't like that, why put it on? You know what I mean? Like, if the 60s didn't work, why wear a tie-dye t-shirt? Like, it's kind of like... But because those images are so potent in our cultural subconscious, it's kind of, I don't know, I don't think it's kind of right to use images that you don't agree with, or like images from movements that are like culturally based for a movement that you don't actually believe in what happened.
So we came out of that movement, so we of all people have the greatest right to use those things, because we saw the fault, the fatal flaw in that movement, and we want to teach people about why it failed. We came from the 60s.
But why flaunt the flaw?
Well, we want people to not make the same mistake again, because history, that's what history has done. Human history has been the same mistake repeated time and time again, and we're living in a time when the acceleration of social causes is exponential, and people are making the same mistakes faster and faster and faster. And so we want to stand in a place and give people some kind of a reference point and say, hey, wait a minute, don't make the mistake your parents made or your grandparents made.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're them.
Yeah.
Don't get damaged like we are. You don't have to go through the pain and the suffering.
Yeah.
In order to figure out what we've already learned.
That's my biggest beef. That's my biggest beef, is that whole thing. Because, like...
Other than the bus, what is it?
Because well,
other than
yeah,
the
what
bus,
else
what else is there that,
you know,
has anything to do with hippies?
The 60s.
Yeah, really, it's a small part of what we do.
Yeah, well, it's one bus. Like, what else?
Oh, no. But I mean, like, the Hippie Crits magazine.
Did you ever read it?
Hippie Crits, yeah. And
just talking about why the movement didn't get off the ground and why what we're doing works for us.
Yeah, and...
And could work for everybody else.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in there. I guess the music is kind of not really in there.
Nothing with the clothes, okay. Nothing with
I think there's a lot of romanticism about the 60s, and we wanna clear away the smoke and mirrors, because people looked at the 60s as something great that happened in human history, but it was actually the beginning of a great breakdown in human society.
Like the new Israel, the Commonwealth of Israel. Like, if you're going to start something new, why rely on old clothing? You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to start something new, why not, like, fashion a new idea? Like,
well,
why,
it's not something new, though. It's something old.
The
new Israel is something very old. It goes back almost about 3,000 years. We're not the originators of it.
Of Israel.
We're not.
See, yeah. You know.
We just responded to the spirit.
Okay, we got off track here. I didn't want to go down that track yet. I didn't want to go into the... I want to just talk to you guys for a bit more. And then we can talk about the kind of like... Whatever. The tenants and that whatever, but I just want to talk about chickens and good food and stuff. Oh, here we go. I gotta answer it. Hello? Okay, thanks. Cool. Okay, I'll cover that. That's coming up in the show. Okay, bye. A listener who said he's enjoying the show and wants me to ask some hard questions, but I'm going to save that for later. I'm not... Oh, God, here we go again.
Phone's ringing off the...
There we go. That'll make him think twice about calling. Sorry about that, caller, if you... Okay, they're not going to call back, but... So now you're there. You've been there for a while. Like, how are things?
Things are excellent.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay. There's that.
Don't call.
Phone again.
Okay, I'll answer it one more time, and then you're cut off, listeners. Trick call. So you've been there a couple weeks. How's it going?
It's going excellent, yeah. I just couldn't... I couldn't have even... I could have never dreamt that life could be as fulfilling as it is now, you know. Could have never dreamt that I could find a life, or that it was even possible to have a life where I'm living for a purpose that, you know, it exceeds my own selfish own, you know, my own, like, purposes that I once thought my ultimate purpose was something for myself, somewhere to take me, you know, and see myself.